Hey, it's Melissa from Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600, and thanks for checking out the podcast right here. If you want, you can always subscribe, share, and like it. Hope to see you guys soon. Thanks. So New Vance Health Hospitals in Danbury and Norwalk, some of the ones that I'm just mentioning, reopened for elective surgeries and other procedures because we were starting to see a decrease in COVID-19 infections, which is great news. That actually happened last week. And to talk a little bit more about that this morning is Dr. Jeff Nicastro, who is with the New Vance Health Network. He's the chair of surgery there. Doc, thanks for being with us. How are you?
Thank you, Melissa. Doing well this morning.
So elective surgeries, like I said, they were on hold based on the hospitals and what they decided was best for them. So it sounds like they're now back for New Vance hospitals like Norwalk and Danbury. What exactly does that mean?
Well, that means that elective procedures, which of course were necessary, but could be delayed from the standpoint of time during this crisis, we're now starting to reintroduce those procedures and getting the necessary care to our patients.
So did you find that people weren't getting the care that they need because of COVID-19 fears?
Well, I think that we held on procedures that were safe to hold on during the height of the crisis. But now that we're seeing the epidemiology show us a decrease in the cases and following the state guidelines, we're able to now get those things back on the schedule and get them taken care of.
So, like, could you give us an example? What are some of these procedures you're talking about?
So a typical procedure might be someone who's had, let's say, gallstones in the past in one attack, but it hasn't been sick from their gallbladder, but does need the gallbladder out. That'll be the type of procedure that now we would put on. It's the type of thing that doesn't include a long hospital stay, and that can be taken care of at this point in time.
Okay, that makes sense. Now, are you finding for people, I'm sure you've notified people who maybe were on hold or, hey, you know what, wait a few more weeks, a couple of more months, you know, and they're now being notified you can come back in and you could get this procedure done. Are you finding people are hesitant to come in?
I think that some people, I think by and large, we've seen most people are reasonably trusting of our judgment and are willing to come in and get their conditions taken care of. And some are trepidatious and hesitant to come in. So we're seeing both.
Mm-hmm. And again, we are talking to Dr. Jeff Nicastro, who is the New Vance Health Network Chair of Surgery. And again, a big announcement last week when New Vance Health Hospitals like Danbury and Norwalk decided to reopen for elective surgeries and other procedures because we were seeing a drop in COVID-19 infections, or new ones, I should say. So would you say, Doc, that there's plenty of capacity at our hospitals?
I'd say yes, we have plenty of capacity, and that I would make it clear that it is safe to come to the hospitals and other healthcare locations to be taken care of. And so people should not be afraid to seek the care that they need.
Can you walk us through a little bit, like, what the hospital setting looks like right now? I think for anybody who hasn't been in the hospital in the last couple of months with the pandemic going on, do you have separate floors for COVID-19 patients? How do you, I guess, monitor people not getting sick from COVID if they're coming in for a procedure, things like that?
So the hospital procedures and flows are quite a bit different. So upon arrival in the hospital, everyone coming through the door, all of our healthcare workers and any patients are screened both with questions and with temperatures before they come in. A major difference is that for the time being and until the guidelines change, there are no visitors in the hospital, with a few exceptions, but in general, no visitors. There are areas of the hospital where we are cohorting the patients who have been demonstrated to have the COVID infection, and areas with patients that have not. So the hospital is functioning a bit differently than it did before the crisis.
Mm. And what would you say to the people who are maybe a little hesitant? They probably should get some of these procedures done, but they're a little unsure. They're on the fence this morning. What would you say to them?
I would reassure them. I would say that we've taken all the appropriate precautions to keep our patients and our healthcare workers safe while appropriately treating the COVID patients. I don't think anyone should have a hesitation or a concern about either seeing their doctor in an outpatient setting if necessary or coming to the hospital for necessary care.
And do you think New Vance Health, the hospitals, have what they need in place if we do go through another wave. I know we've heard from the governor many times that we are expecting another wave of the coronavirus to kind of swoop through in the fall. And that may mean the capacity numbers kind of dwindle a little bit for our hospitals for the time being. So are you recommending people, you know, let's just say July, August, if they want to make an appointment for September or October, are you kind of maybe not pushing for that, or are you going to kind of see where things go?
No, there are clear guidelines in place to make sure we have the appropriate resources, both in capacity and in personal protective equipment, to respond to any surge that we might see. And our reintroduction of elective procedures is an example. We're not reintroducing them all at once. We're reintroducing them in a staged fashion. And so I think Nuvance is quite ready for any surge that might occur. Obviously, we all hope that that doesn't happen, but should it occur, we will be prepared at Nuvance to take care of it.
Dr. Jeff Nicastro, thank you so much from Nuvance Health. We appreciate you taking the time to talk to us, and we'll certainly talk to you later. Have a great day.
Melissa, you have a good day, too.
We are excited to be able to check in with the American Red Cross. We have Kelly Eisner joining us live right now with the Connecticut chapter. Kelly, thanks for being with us. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you so much for having me, Melissa.
So the last time I checked in with you, Kelly, I was right when the pandemic got started, and we learned that not just here in Connecticut, but across the country, almost every single blood drive that was scheduled, at least for the springtime, had to be canceled because there was just no way to regulate those. So where are we at now with blood drives here in Connecticut? Have we upped the number since then?
Well, we are starting to get a handle on good spaces and being able to continue to hold blood drives there. That's not to say that we don't still need people to, you know, if you have a connection to a large room like a gym, a conference hall, something like that, that has a lot of space, we would definitely love to hear from you. We saw this amazing outpouring of support from Connecticut and from actually across the nation. You know, people heard the call and came out and have been donating blood, which was amazing to see. Unfortunately, right now, because, you know, hospitals are starting to reschedule all those surgeries that had to be postponed, things are kind of getting back into normal life and the demand is going up. And because of that, now we're seeing ourselves in this more urgent situation. You know, it's not, I wouldn't call it a shortage yet, but that's exactly what we're trying to get in front of, so that we're not in that place.
Yeah, I can imagine that, you know, as we start to kind of go back to a sense of normalcy, that it would have this trickle effect on blood drives. And where are we at as far as blood shortage? You know, where are we at?
Right now, the words that we're using are urgent. You know, it's sort of internally, we always think of like a scale of like emergency would be the absolute, like that's the shortage. That is like, drop what you're doing if you can and go out and donate blood. We're not quite to that point yet, but
we are starting
to see. Yeah, it's very encouraging. But the key too is that, you know, blood is perishable. You can't freeze. I mean, you can freeze components of it, but you can't stockpile it. So
right.
No matter how many, you know, people come out in May, it's not going to be able to be used in November, mm-hmm. kind of thing. So,
yeah. And my question, I guess, at this point too, Kelly, is just to be able to give a little bit of relief to our listeners. For people who do want to go and give blood, there are a bunch of protocols that are in place to keep people safe while the pandemic's still going on, right?
Absolutely. So, I mean, thankfully, our staff, even before COVID, you know, they were trained in infection control. But, you know, one of the things when you get to a blood drive, before you can even go into the room where the donations are happening, you have to pass a temperature screening. You have to wear a mask. We'll ask you to use hand sanitizer right at the door. And then throughout the process, we have extra staff working to wipe down beds, all equipment. As soon as something's touched, you know, when that person is done, it gets wiped down. It's sort of like a more enhanced version of what we were already doing, just to really step it up.
We're talking to Kelly Eisner of the American Red Cross Connecticut chapter. And I know, Kelly, in the beginning of this interview, you had mentioned that people, if they have, you know, a gymnasium that is vacant, or maybe they know a hall, or they have an area where they can host a blood drive, to reach out to you guys. How do people go about doing that, and what are some of the things that you're looking for that would be considered a successful place to have a blood drive?
Well, you know, especially now as the summer months approach and we start to get into warmer weather, all blood drive sites have to be air conditioned. So things like a gym is perfect because it's air conditioned, it's wide. You know, when you were talking about some of the extra safety protocols, additionally, we're spacing out the donor beds 6 feet in every direction, the chairs and all that. So just if you've ever seen what a blood drive kind of normally looks like in blue skies, just imagine that 6 feet wider in every sense. So big spaces, 1,500 square feet or more, with air conditioning, access to restrooms. You know, I always just encourage people, if you want to give 1-800 Red Cross a call, they can talk you through the ins and outs of it. But if you have a space that kind of sounds like it's meeting that criteria, please, you know, do be in touch.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know if you go to your website, Kelly, you can find where, you know, you could type in a zip code and it'll show you the closest location for you to be able to donate. The only thing I've noticed, Kelly, is in the midst of the pandemic going on, so for myself, I've tried to go and sign up for a local drive, and I'll notice that immediately those sign up really fast. I mean, they fill up very quickly. Would you say that's because we don't have as many drives going on? I mean, are you guys not allowing as many people to come and give blood? I mean, what's kind of contributing to that?
Well, it's twofold. And part of it is what you said, that, you know, as we're looking for spaces, there aren't as many blood drives going on. That part is starting to change. Like I said, our staff has been working 24/7 to make sure that we have new sites, that we have people that'll run a couple times. So there are more drives popping up on the calendar. But the other part of it is that, you know, in the past, we've always, you know, we still encourage appointments, but we've always said, you know, even if you don't have an appointment, come by, drop in, and we'll do our best to get you in. But with social distancing, we just can't do that. It really has to be based on appointments. So if you don't have an appointment, you know, it's one of those things that we'll probably ask you to come back another time when you do. And because of that, I think the appointments have been filling up quicker.
Yeah, that makes sense. That absolutely makes sense. And what is your website so people can go see where there are blood drives and learn a little more information?
It's redcrossblood.org.
All right. Simple enough. Kelly Eisner, we appreciate you checking in with us from the American Red Cross Connecticut chapter. Hopefully we keep getting our numbers up and we keep staying away from that emergency shortage that we certainly don't want to be anywhere near to. So thank you so much.
Thank you. Great speaking to you today.
All right. It feels like my birthday today because I was so excited before I went to bed last night to hear that the NHL playoffs are coming back. I was very excited about it. Paulie, my friend Paul Pacelli, of course, you know him from Connecticut Today. I know you were excited to hear about this too. And immediately I felt like, all right, we're a couple of schoolgirls freaking out about this, Paul. How are you feeling?
Well, I'm excited. The NHL, the 31 teams voted a couple of days ago, the team reps. And the vote was 29-2 to go ahead with this. Carolina voted no, and Tampa voted no. So it was 29-2. They scrapped the regular season. Mm-hmm. So what the NHL announced was they're going to do this if they can come together with priorities and protocols here. So the regular season is done. It looks like they're going to make a big effort to get some playoffs in. Will they eventually do it? I think the vibe is they're going to try their darndest to. So let's cross our fingers. They're going to do everything out of two hub cities. Mm-hmm. They haven't picked which two yet.
Yeah, they're supposed to let us know that, I think, later on, probably in June, I would think that we have an idea of that. I know a couple cities up there, Chicago, Las Vegas, Vancouver.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I didn't see anything about our area
there, but
you know, that's to be expected. I was personally excited, as you know, just because I felt like my Boston Bruins were going to get hosed out of a potential title this year. Mm-hmm. So I'm thrilled to know that they would be included because they're the number one seed for the Eastern Conference.
Yeah.
But I'm looking in here, and I mean, when you're talking about the, you know, the top 24 teams, you know, it doesn't mean the Rangers and the Islanders are out of it. They're very much right in there, you know, to be able to compete and go further as well. So, I mean, it's good news all around for our audience.
Of the four major sports, the NHL year in and year out is the only league of the four major sports where you can see a team, you know, barely squeak into the playoffs, go on a run because the goaltender gets hot, and a lot of these teams that barely make it in have young legs, and they can make a run all the way to the Stanley Cup Finals. So as long as you're in, you know, I think, you know, hopefully, crossing our fingers, if the league can pull this off, and they're going to announce those two cities, as you say, sooner than later, they can make this work. Logistically, it means that they have to have all these teams, you know, half the teams in one city, half the teams in another. The players may not be able to see their families for upwards of 2 months.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's going to be real interesting.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. And I mean, I was telling the listeners before, for anyone who didn't know, you have a background, obviously, in hockey, certainly with announcing Quinnipiac and all of that.
Yeah.
You know, have you ever heard or seen anything like this before? I had my doubts. I didn't think that there was even a possibility they'd be bringing back any kind of a season.
No, of course you never saw anything like this before. I mean, this was unprecedented, a full stop, not only for hockey and everything else. If there's any of the four sports that I could see doing their darndest to make this happen, it would be the NHL. You know, having had 10 plus years of being surrounded with hockey coaches and hockey players, the families, the support staffs, it just doesn't surprise me. And let's face it, they're still not sure that the baseball players will agree to this.
Right.
The NFL is a ways off. They'll probably play. The NBA is still negotiating. So out of the four leagues, Melissa, just from a money point of view, the NHL of the entire four, they probably need and could use the TV exposure and the TV ratings the most out of the four leagues.
I would agree with that. You know, I always, growing up, I couldn't believe hockey was never, to me, as popular as like a Super Bowl. To me, I don't think you could get more exciting than watching hockey, especially live. But, you know, to each their own. Now, Paul, obviously we've run out of time here, but you're coming up later today. Any quick, you know, let us know, what are you talking about later today?
Later today, I'm efforting a guest who is both a virologist, biologist, scientist, and a devout Catholic. You know, I get a lot of calls in the afternoon from people who are frankly angry that they're not allowed to go to Mass. And so we'll delve into that as far as the balance between religion and science, and whether or not people should just kind of take a breath, even if you're barred from your house of worship, and let this thing pass.
Mm. I mean, I just know from myself, I'd love to almost like chime in on that conversation just because I know I'm a devout Christian myself. But to me, I always believe that you can have church at home. I mean, and I'm not saying like to watch it from home, but really for me, church is like a check-in point. It's a place for me to kind of get myself centered, you know, be able to connect with my pastors. Yeah. But, you know, to pray at home, to find your own kind of community at home and still be able to be very driven in your faith, I think is doable. And to risk not getting sick, to me, you'd keep the churches shut down. But I understand, you know, there's two sides to every story. So
absolutely,
that sounds interesting.
Yep,
I appreciate it. All right. Paul Pacelli, we're going to look forward to talking to you at 1 o'clock this afternoon for Connecticut Today. Thanks for waking up early to talk to me now. I appreciate
you. No problem. For you, anything, Melissa. Anything. Anything, anytime, overnight, early morning, doesn't matter.
He has to say that. Literally, it's in his contract. Do whatever Melissa says. All right, Paul, thank you so much. I appreciate you. I'll talk to you later this morning. And today is a huge day, because in Cape Canaveral, Florida, NASA and SpaceX are proceeding towards a historic launch to the International Space Station from the Kennedy Space Center. In fact, it's supposed to happen this afternoon. To give us some insight, we have David Mestre of the Discovery Museum joining us this morning. David, I've missed you. How are you, my friend?
Hello, how are you? I've missed you guys.
Yeah, I'm so glad that you're back. So talk to me about this a little bit, David. So today, this is a pretty big deal because, unless I'm crazy, we haven't seen something like this in almost a decade.
That's correct. Yeah, this is we're calling this Launch America. This is the first time that we've got American rockets, an American spacecraft launching from American soil, sending American astronauts to the International Space Station.
Why is it that it's been this long since we've seen this kind of a launch?
Well, you know, one of the things that happened is that NASA decided to do a new way of actually sending astronauts and cargo to the International Space Station. Now, they started what was called the Commercial Crew Program and set up this public and private partnership. And long and short of it is that they wanted to have private companies actually start shuttling gear and astronauts to the International Space Station. And then NASA could concentrate on going to Moon, Mars, and beyond. And so this is the first time that we're seeing a private company actually sending a human-rated spacecraft into space to dock with the International Space Station. So, and before, when Americans sent astronauts into space, we, the American people, the government, actually owned the spacecraft. But at the end of this mission, that spaceship actually goes back to its company, SpaceX, because that's who owns it.
That's crazy. This is amazing. So, you know, what is, I guess, the what is the goal here with sending this crew up today? What is NASA looking to accomplish?
Well, so the big thing is to show that that we can actually cultivate private companies to actually build hardware, operations, spacecraft and rockets to actually send astronauts into space. And so a number of different companies have been really anxious and excited about the possibility of actually doing space exploration, but they needed to jumpstart this technological leap. And so NASA decided to enter into these public-private partnerships where the companies actually develop the technology, do their own research and development, and have this profit motive to actually do this. And then NASA does the certification process. So they use a lot of their experience. They share their knowledge and expertise. And then they can certify each of these vehicles for spaceflight.
How cool. Now, forgive me if this is a dumb question, but I just remember reading maybe a couple of years back about the Tesla model car, the Tesla Model X car. Is that what you're talking about? Like, do you mean vehicles like that?
Yeah, no. So what I'm talking about are actual space vehicles. So the real interesting story here is the story of Elon Musk and his companies. Mm-hmm. And so and they're intertwined in a way. So what happens is that Elon Musk actually started a company called SpaceX. And the purpose of SpaceX was to create the technology to actually turn humanity into a multi-planet species. That's sort of the big story. But it takes a lot of little stories to get to that big story. And the step today, the milestone today, is to show that they can actually build a human space-rated space vehicle. And so this is a demonstration of their technological expertise. And if they can launch today, if they can dock with the International Space Station, if they can land and recover that spacecraft and recover our astronauts, that will prove that they have built a spacecraft that is capable of sending humans into space.
That is so neat. Wow.
Yeah, it's exciting. It's really, really exciting.
It is. So are you going to be watching it live? Like, are there ways to stream this live?
Yeah, so the Discovery Museum is actually going to have a watch party. You have to go to our Discovery Museum Facebook page starting around noon today and really culminating at around 4:30 with the launch. We're going to have Elliot Severn. He actually is one of our workers at the museum. He's an astronomer and a space journalist, photographer. He's been to a number of different launches, have met astronauts, and so he has an incredible amount of expertise when it comes to telling the story of SpaceX and its rockets. So if you really wanted to delve into the real nitty-gritty of the kinds of engines that are used and how they're actually going to recover the spacecraft and the rockets, this is kind of a really exciting opportunity to be able to really pick Elliot's brain.
That is so cool. And if anybody wants to be able to get in touch with you guys or learn a little bit more about the Discovery Museum, where can they go?
Yep, they can go to our website at www.discoverymuseum.org.
David, we so appreciate you. I look forward to talking to you again next week. Where was Bill today? What happened to him?
Yeah, I know. Bill decided to have like a couple of the experts on, I guess.
No, we love having both of you guys. You guys
absolutely,
are awesome. So
absolutely.
Looking forward to it. So glad that you're back. Thanks, David. I'll talk to you soon.
Absolutely. Take care.